Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined by Chaboy Josh Davey. It is Friday. We are talking recruiting, and coming up, we'll talk to Jeff Shannon and Dan Abern, dive into some larger, farther-reaching topics, particularly as we prepare for the upcoming November Division I recruiting window. But Josh, first, you and I are going to talk about the IL Southeast Prospect Day, which took place this past weekend in Marietta, Georgia, in conjunction with a lot of the folks, a lot of the partners down there. You guys got some eyes on incredible talent, and Eli Enzer went viral, and
he did.
A lot more went on. So how do you summarize the weekend?
It was pretty cool. You know, we've been going down to Atlanta now for 3 or 4 years. The one thing that jumps out is it's crazy, you know, being here in Baltimore, obviously, you know, there's not a lot of facilities that can handle the amount of like soccer and lacrosse that are being played there. And the facility we're at was this beautiful new facility. We were actually the first tournament that had been there, Franklin Gateway Sports Complex down in Marietta. Three fields, essentially back to back to back, you know, concessions. It was an ideal for any lacrosse or, you know, sporting event, youth event. And there are a dime a dozen down there, which is really cool. So we got down there on Friday and spent some time with the Thunder LB3 guys. And they have a brand new facility down there, so we checked that out. Coach Zilberity was running some of their younger committed players through some training on a Friday afternoon, which I thought was, you know, guys were going to do some lacrosse, and they're going to watch their high school football team play. Just a different, you know, world down there a little bit, you know, we're used to up here. And the facility was awesome. You know, did some interviews with those guys. We were able to check out their headquarters, ate some good food, and then Saturday got up early and got after it and got to see some really tremendous young players play in front of some good, you know, some great colleges in front of the IL staff as well.
I mentioned Enzer, and I want to address that first. You know, he's a 2019 MIDI heading to Ohio State. He's 6'2", 180 pounds, really good player, but he's got a special skill. The kid knows how to play the guitar and sing.
He is one of a kind. We interview so many kids, you know, between committed academies, kids of all ages. He is the most unique kid I've ever met. I've never met a young person. That sounds really old when I say I've met a young person, but who totally knows who he is and owns who he is. He doesn't care about anything. He knows who he is totally. You know, not a lot of kids could have just plop a chair down in the middle of a lacrosse tournament. What's cool is if you watch a video, there's literally games and goals being scored behind him. Puts his hat on, sits down, no cleats on, and just starts ripping some song. You know, it was a song I never heard of. It was not an original, but I mean, it was unbelievable. I was lucky enough to be taking the video that you guys have probably seen via Instagram and Twitter, but the kid is truly one of a kind and just a person who attracts other people. You want to spend time with him.
What kind of player is he?
He's great. You know, he's a big guy, 6'2", 180 pounds, really uses his body well. He's just an athlete, and that's what Atlanta, I think, is known for. But what's cool is a lot of these guys now, I said this to one of the staff members down there, is, you know, we've gone down there before, and it was all athletes. Eli is a great example of an athlete who has clearly been coached up by Coach Pons and Coach Zilberity and those guys down there for a long time, and is a finesse player now. He's really able to have the balance of, you know, being able to use his body really well and sort of that athleticism, but has a great stick and unbelievably high IQ, and is a guy who is, I think, is a perfect fit for Ohio State.
If you go to insidelacrosse.com/recruiting, you can find all of the evaluations from the 2017 IL Southeast Prospect Day. Over 20 that were done. McAneer taking the lead on that. Josh, who else stood out to you from the event?
Yeah, there were a handful of players, some committed, some uncommitted. Gerard Kane was a player who was a Hartford commit, who was just really heady player, kind of played like a Canadian. Great stick, flashy, but just super creative. Was a guy who stood out, scored a lot of goals in the weekend. A 2020 was a player, Fulton Bayman from the Lovett School, another Thunder LB3 guy who is a 2020 but had some conversations going on before the recruiting legislation passed with some pretty high D1s, who's a guy that he reminds me a lot of like a Michael Sowers, which is a big comparison, but small attackman, used his stick really well, really, really, really heady player. There were just a lot of athletes. Andrew Pritz is another one from Walton who uses his body really well but has a really, really great IQ. And I think it just speaks to what I said earlier, is that these guys, they're all athletes. You know, that's what they're bred down there. And now they finally have had this IQ of, you know, Liam Banks and Andy Pons and these coaches that I keep mentioning over and over again. You know, Coach Zilberity, a Syracuse legend, we were talking for a while about his schedule. I mean, he gets up and he does lacrosse all day. He trains guys all day, and he loves it. And it's reflecting because these players who are using their bodies really well and have this athleticism, their IQ is off the charts. And I mean, we've seen a lot of these, you know, 2019s and 18s from this Thunder LB3 program and others in Atlanta making Division I commitments. And I'll tell you what, there's going to be a lot more in the 2020 class to follow next year.
It's a point that can't be understated. I think it was this week that Ty included a comment about the way that Atlanta is emerging as a new hotbed in his mailbag, and it's, you know, external reinforcement of a point that I've been making since going down for the Southeast Invitational. I think, you know, 2014 and 2015. Remember seeing players that have gone on to really impressive college careers or are starting college careers with high expectations. I think, you know, Nate Solomon was, it's not to say that there weren't players coming out of Atlanta prior to that, because there certainly were. You know, Neil Hicks, I believe, is a middie from Lovett School who went to Notre Dame and you know, represented that. And obviously Scott Ratliff is kind of the poster child for the Atlanta area, and he's a 2013 you know, college graduate. So this has been going on for more than a decade. But for me, Nate Solomon represents the starting point for this current iteration of talent, wave of talent that's coming out of that region. And I think that, for me, what separates the Atlanta Marietta area from a lot of other emerging hotbeds is how important scholastic sports are to it. And I guess I shouldn't say that it separates it, because it's actually true of a lot of the emerging hotbeds, whether they be, you know, certainly the Dallas-Fort Worth area and how much they care about high school football. The same is true for Southern California. Minnesota is an emerging hotbed, and the passion that they have for high school hockey is exceptional. And certainly for me, coming from Ohio and knowing how important high school sports are there, you know, whether it be football or basketball, it was a little bit of a culture shock when I moved to the Mid-Atlantic for the first time to realize that, you know, it's not to say that high school sports don't matter, but they just matter a lot less than they do in other parts of the country. And, you know, Atlanta and New Orleans and then the outlying areas, the more rural parts of Georgia and Louisiana, produce some of the best athletic talent per capita of any region in the country. And so the thing that is interesting and important, I think, about Atlanta specifically is that the high schools that are really good at sports tend to be large public high schools. And relative to other parts of the country that have large public high schools that are good at football, it seems like lacrosse has been adopted more quickly, more easily in that area than in some other parts of the country, where lacrosse typically enters through the private schools. You know, even certainly Florida, we think of St. Andrews, and more recently St. Thomas Aquinas. In Northern California, you know, St. Ignatius Prep wasn't necessarily the first program to, you know, kind of emerge as a dominant leader in the region, but they certainly have become the eminent one now. Southern California is probably a little bit more of an exception in the sense that the San Diego public high schools kind of led the charge at the outset of that emerging hotbed. But, you know, with Atlanta, so many of these, Centennial where the Solomons went, so many of these high schools that are really good are public high schools. There are a couple private ones, but so many of them are public, and I think it opens up the access to the sport to a lot of different individuals that might not be able to afford to play without the opportunity to play through their, you know, public high school or public junior high. So that's why I'm so bullish on Atlanta, not only for its potential to continue to produce talent, but also for how beneficial it will be for the sport for Atlanta to be a hotbed, because it brings in a different demographic than what we've seen when lacrosse has popped up in other parts of the country.
And I think what you hear a lot of coaches talking about is what these, you know, non-traditional hotbeds need is great coaching. And that's one thing they have there. One guy I spent a lot of time with this weekend is Andy Pons. His son is Mac Pons, who just won a national championship with Maryland. He's a coach at Woodward Academy down there. But being able to just be in that Thunder LB3 headquarters on Friday, I'm going to have to give a shout out to one more kid, because he didn't play in the event on Saturday, but was there training on Friday, Eric Maliver. And he is one of the smoothest players I've seen. He was working with Cade McLeod, who's a Georgetown commit, Charlie and Cooper Higgins, who are both Fairfield commits, a goalie and a midfielder. And the four of them were just getting after it for about an hour.
And Maliver's a 2020 going to Maryland,
who committed before the recruiting legislation sort of kicked in. One of the smoothest players I've seen. You know, we get out to these events, but to be able to watch these guys kind of work out one-on-one, and the way they hold their sticks and move their bodies, I don't know what it was. It was something unique. I don't even know if I can – smooth is the closest word I can come to it, but just stood out, and a guy I'm looking forward to playing or seeing him playing moving forward. And a lot of those guys, some of the other interesting conversations were just a lot of them were having conversations before the recruiting legislation kicked in, and just hearing how their experiences stopped. There's a great article in the next issue about Eli Enzer that Matt Kinnear wrote that talks about his experience, and some of the schools have reached out to him on midnight after he had kind of been in purgatory a little bit, you know, when the legislation passed. So that's also just an interesting side of this whole thing. But it was an amazing weekend. The weather was beautiful. Got to give a shout out to our boy Tommy Lyons, who our new event coordinator, who went down there and absolutely crushed it. So it was a great weekend. We're looking forward to going back there next year. You know, just keep an eye out for everything coming from IL this week. There's some great video, some great content coming up, some interviews from a lot of those players down there. So yeah, it was a fantastic weekend.
I'm going to give a horrible segue here and talk about how Atlanta is the prescription that the sport of lacrosse needs. You know what else is a good prescription? RX Bar. It's the prescription that the protein bar world needs. I told you it was going to be bad.
That's
so
good. That's good.
So RX Bar's core ingredients do all the talking. You get the bar. It, you know, obviously comes in a box with a bunch of bars inside and whatever. You take it out, and instead of like, it just says like 2 eggs, 3 almonds, 4 dates. And 1 coconut, and that's the ingredients. And then I was like, so that's what it says, like in huge font on the front of the package. And I flipped it over because I'm like, oh, I want to check out what the actual ingredients list is. And it just is the same thing. It's pretty cool. So, as I said, it's simply like eating those things. No BS. Turns out the real food ingredients actually taste good, and you can legitimately like taste the food. I mean, they use the dates to like bind everything together, and so. Dates don't have like a ton of flavor, but it does present like this, like, I don't know, it's like everything has like a nice like little fruitiness regardless of what the flavor, whether I've had a peanut butter one, I had a chocolate peanut butter one, and I think I have a chocolate coconut one that I haven't had yet.
I know you went to the gym the other day. You're talking about getting after on the rowing machine.
Well, and I was like, yeah, I did that so that I could eat the bar. I'm like, I'm not going to eat a protein bar without working out. So yeah, I decided to get 20 minutes in on the rowing machine, and it was the first time in a long time, and I'm feeling it. My like, the bicep, where the bicep connects to like the bottom of the elbow, is getting a little, I don't know, we got some lactic acid that was released in there. It's a little
Your
sore.
Shirt's looking a little tighter than it usually is.
Oh, get out of here. We don't need any of that. Regardless of whether you're looking for sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit, there's an RX bar for you. They come in 11 delicious flavor varieties. No gluten, no soy, no dairy, no added sugar, no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or fillers. Egg whites for protein, like I said, dates to bind, nuts for texture. They're great for breakfast, a snack. On the copy here, it says you throw in your bag for the plane. That's actually a good idea. Are you what's your go-to meal at the airport?
Airport?
Yeah, you seem like a Chick-fil-A guy.
A huge Chick-fil-A guy, but anything greasy. It's one of those things where like I'm traveling, I'm gonna do whatever.
Yeah,
I want.
You're basically committing that you're gonna make yourself feel as bad as possible as you're sitting on the plane and when you get off the plane.
Yes.
You could have an RX bar and you wouldn't feel that way.
I need to get one then.
Pre and post workout snack. If this all sounds good to you, which I literally couldn't understand how it wouldn't, get 25% off of your first order. Visit rxbar.com/lacrosse and enter promo code lacrosse at checkout. Once again, 25% off your first order. Hit up rxbar.com/lacrosse and enter lacrosse at checkout. We would really appreciate it if you did. And the Inside Lacrosse podcast rolls on with Dan Ayburn. Dan, going to start with the news. It was a big week for the school up north. University of Michigan, Kevin Connery and staff bringing in, let's see, how many commits did they get? 3? 4?
Yeah. 4 in about a matter of 10 or so days,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, 3 on the 23rd, or at least announced on the 23rd. Donovan Welsh, an attackman, 2018 from Fayetteville Manlius. Andrew Darby, a 2018 defenseman from Darien. Jacob Jackson, a 2019 middy from Oregon Jesuit, I believe.
Dallas Jesuit.
And John Kirikoff, a 2018 reclass goalie from IMG. What do you make of this spat of verbals?
Well, like you said, it's pretty much Kevin Connery's first imprint and impact as a recruiter. I mean, You know, that job was kind of up in the air pretty late into the recruiting circuit, so it was obvious that he was going to have, you know, a slow start, and it looks like he's trying to catch up late during the fall cycle. So that's a pretty big, impactful, you know, slew of commitments to kind of come along. I'm really excited to see what this Andrew Darby kid, you know, anytime you come from Darien, you probably have a pretty good defensive pedigree, so I'd love to see what he can do with him.
And for that 2018 group, to bring in three guys this late is pretty impressive and a little bit surprising. A couple of flips there within, and I mentioned, obviously, the reclass in Kurikoff, who was originally committed to High Point. A couple of guys that they're joining in this group, Bryce Clay, an attackman with whom we're very familiar, a lefty from Forest Hills Central. Griffin Jelinas is probably the headliner of the class. He's a attackman from Brunswick who plays for Primetime. And then Paxton Alexander is a middie who we're familiar with as well. What do you think of this group? How do you feel like it might stack up?
It's probably Michigan's best class yet. We say that every year, but I do think that this could be almost a program transformer in a way, because when I look at a lot of these guys, what really stands out to me is not only the volume, but the overall athleticism of the class. This is a group that is going to make Michigan competitive within the Big Ten, and I think that's, you know, they've had great athletes, but I don't know if they have had the bulk of athletes that they've really needed to go against Maryland, go against Johns Hopkins, Ohio State, the likes of that. So I think this 18 class is going to be a big one for new coach Kevin Connery.
And moving on, another we talked about Marquette in this space a couple times in recent weeks, but they picked up another couple commitments as well.
Yeah, they got a real talent in LSM Jack Cleary. He's a 2019. I believe he was a standout at one of our events this summer, one of the summer invitationals. Just thought he was a fantastic player.
Yeah, that's right. He picked up another big evaluation last fall as well. He was at the fall ILRI.
They also got an attackman, Griffin Fries, a 2018. And then two 19s that are very exciting, attackman Devin Cowan and attackman Jake Stegman. I remember Devin Cowan was one of my standouts at Maverick Showtime this past summer.
Griffin Fries is an interesting player. He's from Shawnee Mission East in Kansas. Not a lot of talent that's come out of Kansas so far. He was originally committed to Air Force and then, as we mentioned, committed to the Golden Eagles on Wednesday. And it's interesting to me in two ways. The first is, you know, he's a finisher. He's got kind of a Canadian-esque type game. So just the geography of that is kind of fascinating. Yeah. And then you mentioned Jake Stegman, and I just want to shout out the fact that they were two players who played for True in 2015. Some of the players in this squad, I mean, going on to really impressive careers. Cam Chauvet, who is a Hopkins commit, Cooper Prodzik, in addition to those two, I mean, that was a stacked team. I looked back, Keelan Duff was a defenseman on that squad. I was looking back at it this week. I'm like, oh man, this is a really good group. They went, I believe, 4-1 in that 2015 ILRI that they played in. It was, I don't know, just trip down memory lane.
True. No, the Midwest is definitely producing a lot of talent. I think True has really capitalized on amassing it.
And anything else stand out to you from the commitment news this past week?
Not really. Actually, I'll say this. I thought that we'd see a lot more switch commitments. I thought the pace would increase, but actually it doesn't seem to be that way.
Yeah, so with the exception of a couple of programs that are, you know, trying to make some late moves, it feels like at this point, you know, a little bit less than 2 weeks out from the NLI signing period, things have calmed down a little bit.
Yeah, I would actually expect maybe the pace to increase once we hit these recruiting weekends, especially that November 4th, 5th weekend.
Another factor to consider there is so many high school football seasons and high school soccer seasons either are ending or just recently ended, and so it opens up the opportunity to visit in a more substantial way for some guys who might be looking to change their minds. Moving on, it's kind of the end of college fall ball, so just a quick revisiting of the 2017 Power 100 with the lens of who performed in on the fall ball stage. Who were some of the guys that you noticed that need to be mentioned, whether maybe they weren't ranked and looked like players that should have been ranked, or guys who really stood out and maybe were a little bit underranked based on how they first appeared to you?
Well, let's talk about our number one player first, Tahoka.
Because we can't go a podcast without talking about it.
We can't go a podcast without talking about it, but This kid, like, what me and Jeff Shannon saw out of him at the Headstrong event is, like, a kid who clearly fit into their system already and was ready to be a beneficiary of Connor Field's work. Like, this kid was the finishing end on every dodge that this kid had. And I'm already starting to think numbers. What are his numbers going to look like? I know, you know, Paul Carcaterra said this is the this kid is a shoe-in for 50 goals, and I think some people are even saying 60, because Connor Fields scored 66 in his freshman season. Is 70 two out of the range? I don't know.
I mean, it, one of the subtextual aspects of that comment is, how do you put Connor Fields' feeding ability as a senior alongside Lyle Thompson's feeding ability?
Yeah, I think it's different because they're both such differently built players. When I see Tahoka's drives, it's built on power combined with that, you know, technical skill set. I think I'm going to give Lyle a better dodging ability just because he's a little bit more quicker. But, you know, Tahoka's going to have a monster amount of assists by the time he graduates from the University of Albany.
And among the rest of the 2017 class, anybody that you saw in action, whether it was at practice or at a game or event that stood out to you?
Well, when I went to Maryland about 2 weeks ago now, Bubba Fairman, our number two player, looked pretty good. I think that post-grad year really came in handy for this kid because just looking at him from a physical standpoint, he looked like he could be a sophomore or a junior. He just looked big. He was fast. And there was technical polish there, too. And right now it looks like he's on that first starting line along with Connor Kelly and Tim Rotans. So, yeah, Bubba Fairman, I think he's going to be an impact player his freshman season.
Which, it's not a surprise, but I will say that it wasn't as if it was 100% certain that he was going to hit the ground running in College Park.
No, I mean, like, you look at the talent waiting in the wings on this team, there's probably a few guys who could, you know, make that transition to an attack spot or to a midfield spot. So it is interesting to see him actually emerge as a primary candidate this early in the season, as we're calling it, as a first midfielder. So I'm a little surprised that he's actually playing midfield. I thought he might play attack. We've discussed that before, but I'm also not surprised because I know the kid's skill set, and I know we always have projected him to be an impactful player for this program.
For me, Alex Trippi, particularly his performance against Ohio State, I've been a big Alex Trippi fan for a while. Yeah. He was our number six recruit. But because he's small and because there's so much talent at attack at North Carolina, and there was some question as to whether or not he was fast or quick enough to beat elite level players. I think that there were some folks that thought that either, you know, he wasn't going to get on the field much as a freshman, or you know, wasn't necessarily going to kind of play his pure position, whether that be at X or as a lefty. And, you know, to me, I saw a guy who I think is going to start. I think he's going to compete to start at the beginning of the season, and I think by the end of the season he'll be a starter. I don't know. Maybe, you know, that's whether that's a surprise or not, I think, is a difficult question to answer. You wrote a little bit about Jackson Reed. What was your impression of the lefty at Ohio State?
Well, we both saw him not start but play a lot in that game. I just kind of feel like it's kind of in the same, you know, situation with Alex Trippi. I think we both think that he's going to contribute, but how much will the contribution be? Like, I think, you know, given the Canadian skill set, there might be some chemistry there with Trey LeClaire if they were to both start on attack, but we don't know if that's going to pan out just yet. I do think he's a tremendous player, and I think, you know, outside of a guy like Justin Inacio, this is probably the most college-ready player on this team at the moment.
A couple other guys that stood out to me. There's been a lot of conversation about the big midfield class that Syracuse brought in. Obviously, their fall has been cut short due to a mumps outbreak, which might impact the freshman ability to contribute right away. But among all of those guys, Dami, you know, he's from Illinois. He's athletic. I think that there was some question as to whether or not he was going to be college ready right away. And from what I've heard from the coaching staff, he's going to get on the field. I think the original expectation was that he was going to be a top two, top three defensive midfielder. But apparently his offense is a little bit more impressive than was previously expected. And so, you know, Dami Oladunmoye, one of six freshman midfielders for the Orange, I think that you're going to see something pretty impressive out of him this year.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those freshmen make an impact for the Orange, just because when I look at that group as a whole, it's just so athletic. Like, Jacob Buttermore is another guy who I've heard great things about. And for Dami to be showing this offensive prowess this early on, that's great news for Syracuse because they really need the depth at midfield.
One duo of freshmen that emerged this past weekend based on their fall ball performance were Harvard faceoff specialists Stephen Cucurolo and Kyle Massimilian. I think basically, you know, between them and James Sullivan, the expectation is that faceoffs will be a strength for Harvard this year.
Yeah, and this is something that I've really, really needed in the past couple of years. So if those guys can pan out and, you know, make good on their freshman seasons, that could really help a Harvard squad that is really young. You know, we've talked a lot about their freshman class from last year and how it was big, but they also have a huge freshman class this year. So I think that Harvard's one of those teams that's really banking on the future of those two classes.
He was Will Cabrera, an attackman heading to Yale, who's at Yale, but is actually playing a little bit of midfield, stood out to me. I think he's going to be a top six midfielder for the Bulldogs.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he reminds me a little bit of Joey Sessa in the sense that as an attackman converting to midfield, he just brings a goal-scoring punch to that unit. He's different in the sense that he's big, so he's not small, which Sessa is, like, stocky and really solid, but I think he's 5'5 or 5'6. Maybe 5'7". I apologize, Joey, if I'm shortchanging you. But yeah, I think Cabrera is, he has a similar, you know, I don't think he's necessarily going to invert a lot. I think he's got a good nose for the goal, and I think he's going to contribute there for Yale. Anybody else, Dan, stand out to you in terms of freshmen coming off of their fall performances?
Got a spotlight, Connor DeSimone. You know, we saw the Hopkins Headstrong event. Right now, he's running on the second midfield and just really kind of looks to have that impactful skill set that Hopkins kind of needs at midfield right now. Can definitely beat his man, can probably dodge against a long ball. So I think, you know, he played in the second line, but I think there's a good, you know, resume and cause there for him to be a starter in the spring.
Talking to a couple of folks involved with the Canadian national team, they were impressed by a couple of the Notre Dame players coming away from that scrimmage. You know, once again, a guy who it would be hard to say that Arden Cohen being a starter right away and being successful is a surprise because he was a number three recruit. That being said, you know, he's not a knock your socks off athlete to the degree that, like, of course he's going to get on the field right away. So the fact that he is probably going to be covering opponent's best player and starting right away, according to, you know, folks that have seen and heard from those around the Notre Dame program, is certainly a significant development. Again, maybe not a surprise, but at least interesting in the fact that, you know, it's kind of it wasn't a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, but that's also a pretty significant achievement if you really think about it. That's like a freshman linebacker getting the start on, like, Alabama's defense. That's nuts.
Yeah, no question. You know, a couple other guys that have really made strong impressions. I know Mick Upchurch, Matt came back from Princeton practice and had some good things to say about him. Sticking at the defensive end of the field, not a member of the class of 2017, but instead of 2016, who's a freshman at Navy right now, Jeff Durden apparently tearing it up as one of their top long poles, which is going to be an important position after they graduated Matt Reese and Chris Fennell.
And absolutely. And, you know, Navy, I think, is really well coached on the defensive end. I think his potential is very high in that system.
Well, Dan, we're nearly to the end of October, which means that we're nearly to the beginning of November. And the question is, what do you got your eye on event-wise as we transition into this Division I recruiting window?
Well, it obviously ramps up, you know, with the NLI sign date coming up in mid-November. Inside the Cross, we've got our fall invitationals the weekends of November 4th and 5th and November 11th and 12th. And then two events that I really got my eye on later in the month are the Big Four Fall Champions League, November 11th through 12th, and then the NLF Fall Team Tournament, November 19th.
And don't forget, the IL Northeast Prospect Day will be at Bryant on November 11th, so make sure you check that out. In addition to that, we'll be bringing coverage from the Elite 80 event, Boys and Girls, November 4th, from Long Island. So, as always, if you're looking for some recruiting content, check out insidelacrosse.com/recruiting. It is where you can find all of our commitments, evaluations, classes, high school teams, club teams, events, you name it. It's got all the information in there, as well as links to all of our recruiting content and all of our headlines flowing through that as well. Dan, we appreciate you joining us on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Remember to check out rxbar.com/lacrosse. Use lacrosse at checkout if you decide to make a purchase. And we will be back with a trio of podcasts next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.